And welcome to another edition of the E-Factor, brought to you by the Clinton County Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development here in Frankfort, Indiana. So glad to be with you on another great edition, and we hope you're having a great day, great week, great weekend, wherever and whenever you are hearing this broadcast. We are want to remind you again what the E-Factor stands for, what it means. It's the E-tributes of a community: encouragement, engagement, economic development, entrepreneurship, entertainment, elected officials, employment, employers, you name it. It's the E that drives us in our community. And so we're grateful to remind you of that each and every week that we get together, and just to recognize that you might be the E factor in someone's life. You could be the empowerment, the encouragement in someone's life. So go out there and make that happen today. Well, we've got a great guest for you on this program, this edition of the E-Factor, Jeff Papa, and I'm saying that right, Jeff, correct? Is that correct?
Yes, right.
Jeff Papa, PhD, Dr. Jeff Papa. He's the Chief of Staff and General Counsel for the Indiana State Senate, and has also served as the mayor of the town of Zionsville. You were the first mayor of Zionsville. We're going to talk a little bit about that today. Dr. Papa previously was an attorney with Barnes and Thornburg. He's practiced immigration law and served two terms as chair of the Indiana chapter of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, as well as two terms on the National Board of Governors of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. And the list goes on. A very impressive resume indeed. Has a bachelor's of science from Rose Holman, Institute of Technology, an MA from Ball State University, and, of course, your PhD from Indiana State University. So, doctor, thank you for joining us today, and, wow, you're an impressive guy.
Well, I don't know about that. Yeah, happy to talk to you again.
Well, I want to – can I call you Jeff? Is that okay?
Sure.
Jeff, we try to be informal on the program, but I've got, you know, to go back to the very first part of your resume, the first mayor of Zionsville. We've known, you know, I've lived in Indiana for 37 years. Zionsville used to be a cornfield, and you had a big hand in watching that community in north central Indiana, and central Indiana maybe more as a better descript, grow and become what it's today. How was that for you?
Well, yeah, so I've lived there about 18 years, but that it's a very unique. I think we're there are only two towns in Indiana, towns, who have mayors, and that was very intentional how we did that. We used the Government Modernization Act and actually folded in. We did it two separate reorganizations, and first time we eliminated two township governments, and the second time another one. I was actually on the township board the first time we did that. Sort of voted our own offices out of existence, but combined the two and took a really unique approach. And then the second time around in 2014, as a part of that, we restructured our government. We merged with a third township and actually created a system where we eliminated the elected clerk treasurer but added an elected mayor to the town government.
Okay, now when you start eliminating, that can be very controversial. How did you navigate through all of that? There's emotion. There is tradition. There's families involved, friendships, relationships. How did you navigate through all that?
Yeah, and I think that's the key, because a lot of communities have tried to use that and maybe not been as successful or gotten it done. I think it's only been done four times, and we've done it twice. Maybe there's once or twice more on top of that since last I looked. But we've done it twice, and I think the key both times was, first time, the proposal came from the township side, which was the smaller unit. So it was our idea. We didn't feel like we were getting swallowed up. We felt like we were being treated equally. And then the second time, with the town and another township, which was a very small township, they really think the key was making sure everybody got what they wanted. Everybody felt like they weren't being taken advantage of, that they were being treated as equals, and that there were benefits for everyone involved. That really seems to be the key, making sure that it's not really to one side's benefit or the other, it's to everyone's benefit. And we were able to work that out and address everyone's concerns and actually find some creative solutions that made it better for everyone at one time. But that is really the key. You have to make sure everyone's happy with not literally everyone, but all of the groups, the majority of all the groups are that represent the different constituencies are happy with the arrangement that's going to come out the back end of the reorg.
What was the, I mean, when you start thinking about consolidation of government, and we're going to talk about a couple of things today. I mean, mainly government, you're so heavily involved, in the Senate and heavily involved in law. You know, government, wait, you mentioned that word right now and it's a, wow, it's a difficult challenge for us from the national level, and even a state level. But then you drill down on the local level and you start getting into people's school districts and get into people's townships. It can get really, get real muddy. What were the things that you were able to show to the people that this is a benefit and this is why we are moving this direction to your township and then those even beyond the township?
Well, I think in every case, those are going to be, a lot of that's going to be specific to the locality, but it also translates to a lot of areas. So, in the case of the first time, we had some neighboring municipalities that were being very aggressively annexing. So there were concerns about that. There were concerns about local control of planning rather than having the county do it for us. A lot of factors like that. And so what we did in that first reorg was we created a system where when the townships merged with the town, at the end of the day, it was all town. But we had two service districts, and what had been unincorporated township brought in the ordinance with them, the county ordinances, so nothing changed for them overnight. They also kept the county highway department and the county sheriff, and they also kept much lower taxes. So not much changed for them on day one, except for they could no longer be annexed by anyone else, two, that they had actually a say in more local government, because what we did was, in our case, we had council districts, and then those included two at-large districts as well. So no matter where you were, you had at least three members of a seven-member council.
So
it gave you more representation.
Right.
Taxes stayed low. Nothing really changed for you. Now, there was a process over the long haul of properties adjacent to the sort of urban area eventually being transitioned in once they had full services, and that's done by the council under a formula and in public and by agreement, but very orderly transition. And the second time, you know, the state law allows you to qualifying entities, which there's a long list of government entities that can participate, counties, townships, towns, cities, libraries, certain taxing districts can combine under this, and they can redesign how they work. So as long as you don't take a new power that you didn't have before, and as long as you don't shirk a responsibility that you have, you can redesign how all that works. And we, not just the idea of adding a mayor, but we changed some other things as well that we think worked really well for us. And another example would be, you know, the township boards were eliminated. We don't have township government in Zionsville anymore. Okay, so who does the poor relief, the cemetery care, that stuff? The town took it over. And that was pretty seamless for us. Now, other places, you may say, well, we absolutely have to have a township. But in our case, it's worked well to merge them into the town and have one entity overseeing different types of taxing districts, rural and the town.
Yeah. This sounds a lot like the Curtin Shepherd report back in the day. Are you familiar with that? When they were talking about consolidation of government or UNIGOV?
There was resistance to that, and it didn't get a whole lot of traction, although there's some good ideas in there. And this, I think this was something that grew out of that, was the legislature said, well, why don't we give the locals the option to do it if they want to, if they can figure out a way to make it work, and the incentive will be that they can redesign how their government works. So we took advantage of that because it's worked well.
Well, one of the E's that we talk about on this program is effectiveness. And, you know, I think effective government is important. I'm not a believer of big government by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I think we need less government. But, and I think this is where we're getting at. Can we find ways to streamline even government to make it more businesslike, to make it more seamless for the taxpaying entity, the taxpayer, and when those other entities that come into, whether it be a business, a commercial, or an organization, can they sense feel the benefit from this consolidation? And you're saying that the township, you did see some townships go away, but you still saw the services being provided, the cemetery, the poor relief, all of that was still being provided by the township, but not under a trustee.
Yeah, by the town.
By the town.
And you have to. I mean, under the Government Modernization Act.
Right.
The combining entities, like I said, you can rearrange any power that any one of those had coming in, but you can't take a new power.
Right.
And all the responsibilities that all those entities had, you have to take care of those at the end of the day. So even though we ended up with the town, we still have to do all those things.
Now the challenge for you in Zionsville and that group too is that you're in the middle of you're on the in the metro Indianapolis area, so you've got a lot of, like you mentioned, urban boundaries that are all around you. You've carved out Zionsville. And how has that played a role in all of this, being Carmel right down the road, Westfield, Fishers, all of these areas right around you?
Well, I think that the most immediate impact was then those formerly unincorporated areas, which saw very little change in their day-to-day functioning, were now part of a municipality. So they were not subject to being annexed by anyone else. So this is a voluntary action taken by the governmental bodies and then approved by the voters in each of those districts. So the government units approved it, and then the voters approved it. By choice, they made these mergers, but that also made them no longer subject to being annexed by anyone else. So they were able to choose their future and also choose how their government functioned.
And I appreciate you sharing all this, because we're in the process of an annexation process in Frankfort and in Clinton County right now with I-65 and the city of Frankfort. And I think that it's important. It's very timely conversation that we're having, because the county and the city have worked well together to create. That's not always the case, as you well know. It's not always the case at all, but we've seen that collaboration and great information. But you're way beyond that. You're not only the first mayor of Zionsville, but you've got a lot of other hats that you wear. You're involved in the Senate. But one of the things that interested me, you're the president of the Youth Enhancement Training Initiative. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so that was incorporated in 2003. Some friends and I started that. I had taught English for a short while in a village in Nepal, and then maybe 3 years later or so, we had this idea to start an orphanage there. And we did that. We built the facility in three phases, and it's been... First 10 kids arrived in, I think, February of 2005, and we've had orphans cycling through there ever since. Most of them stay there from the time they're little to when they become adults and leave and go to college or start a business or both, and it's worked out really well. And so we raise the money for that. We pay for the operating costs, and then also as a part of that, we spend at least 10 to 15% of what we raise here in the U.S., mostly in Indiana, on underprivileged kids, and we don't have any overhead, we don't have any employees, we don't have an office, we have a board, and if we have expenses, the board pays them out of their pocket, including we try to visit Nepal once a year to see the kids, we pay for that on our own. It's an interesting trip anyway, but it's always amazing to see the kids, and so when people donate money or we have an event that raises money, that all goes to kids, either in Nepal or here, all of it.
Wow. So a passion to help these kids. You actually taught in Nepal and you taught English. So you had hands-on experience with what was going on there.
Yeah, it was very short term, but that was also at the beginning of a really, really nasty civil war that lasted about 10 years. They're still feeling the effects of it.
Yeah.
It got really awful. So there were unfortunately a lot of orphans. A lot of people were killed. A lot of people were displaced, and it was either the poorest or second poorest country in Asia to begin with. So,
wow. Yeah, I've been to Liberia, missions trips there, and worked with folks there. 25-year civil war, and it's when you're talking about that kind of devastation people, you know, these children are left homeless and, you know, what future they have. And it's such a blessing when we see people take the initiative, Jeff, to walk into these people's lives and to be a beacon, to be a light. And thank you very much. I appreciate that. And it's certainly, you know, something so needed in our culture and our world today. Of course, we have our own issues here at home, but I think that we sometimes forget about those underprivileged and the struggling situations that go on in other parts of the country. You are also a co-advisor with ZWorks, which is a co-working space. We actually have a co-working space here in Frankfort. It's called the Iron Block, and we've been very successful. The Chamber of Commerce, we started that about back in 2016. And so we send people from the ZWorks, and ZWorks people have come up here. So it's a collaborative effort, and we appreciate that. Tell me how things go in the ZWorks there in Zionsville.
Well, I'm not as involved in that anymore. I was definitely involved when it was initially conceived and founded, and then I was on the town council at the time. We provided some funding and obviously strategic direction to me, but really the community came together and provided a lot of what was needed. It sort of snowballed once we got it started. Dan Moyer, the guy who was the original brains behind the operation, yep. Got it all underway, saw the vision, and boy, the community pitched in and just provided the things that were needed, and it just didn't stop after that. It's incubated several businesses that have moved on and really taken on a life of its own.
What makes you tick, Jeff? You're the first mayor. I mean, you're involved in orphanages and you're involved in entrepreneurial startups. How do you get involved? What makes you get excited about those kind of things?
I don't know. I think that when you see a lot of status quo type things, and when you take them apart and put them back together, sometimes you find new ways to do things. I think I had a really challenged upbringing, and my family didn't have much of anything, and my parents were handicapped and didn't go to college, and so I've never really known what I was doing. But I think sometimes that's an advantage, because if you don't know how it's supposed to work, you can think of new ways that it might be able to work, because you don't know, all the ins and outs of how it was supposed to work from the beginning.
Well, I mean, it's like a young person, they don't really understand the word impossible because they never tried it before.
Yeah.
Sometimes we tell people, well, you can't do that. And they say, well, how do you know I can't do that? You know, so it's
it's like the 4-minute mile was impossible until Bannister did it, and now you can.
Yeah, and people shatter it all the time, shatter the record. It is amazing. You know, when you think about your innovation or innovative mind and your willingness to take chances and take risk, had you ever been in, politics? I hate using the word politics, more of elected service before you ran for mayor? Or you were on the town board at that time?
Well, yeah, I had been on the township board, which I got into by caucus and then ran for re-election.
Okay.
I don't know. Prior to that, no. I mean, I had done an internship here at the Senate and then been a staff person here, so been exposed to it. And, you know, junior high and high school, I had a very keen interest in watching federal, congressional and political things, but never thought I would be an elected official for sure.
Yeah, when how old were you when you were the mayor, first became mayor?
Oh, I don't know. That would have been 2015. So what's that, 6 years ago?
Wow.
45?
Wow. Wow. So it's hard, though, to get – I mean, you've got a unique mindset to be in government. How does that work? Because when you mention government and innovation, that doesn't always go hand in hand. Because you mentioned status quo earlier, there is probably not more status quo than government.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of good people, but there's just
absolutely a lot of great people.
Yeah, and you do get. I'm not talking about anybody or any specific situation, but you do get a lot of answers that are because that's the way we always did it. Whether they use those words or not, it's just because that's the way we did it. And I sort of found that if you push back on that some and say, well, is that illegal? Would this idea be allowed? A lot of times you can do it different ways. It just hasn't, nobody stops to think of those. That's not true. There are a lot of creative people, but you know what I mean. Like the right. inertia is, here are the forms. Here's what we did last year. Here's right. what everybody else does. So that's how we handle this. And sometimes you can think of a better way.
Is that based on the rigidness of the law? I mean, it's just because it's the rule or the regulation that it's hard to bring creativity into government because you have to deal with all of the obstacles? Or is that just a bad misconception on my part?
I think that's some of it, but I think a lot of it is it's complicated. There's so many levels. There's so many niche specialties. And people are dealing with so many responsibilities that, hey, we got to get this done, we got to get that done, we got to get that done. Here's how we did it before. Let's just do that. And there, you know, maybe feel like there's not a lot of time to sit down and rethink everything. But it really does seem like when you do, you can come up with some good ideas.
Yeah, you seem like a guy that is constantly learning. Is that a nice or a good assumption?
I try to. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it that that attracts you to education? I mean, I'm looking at your resume. I mean, you just continue. You seem like you want more. What is it when, as someone's listening today, because I think sometimes people get caught in the mundane, the status quo. If you could encourage someone today, maybe that young English student or some kid that's sitting in a, you know, look, this has been a very challenging last year and we got kids that are dropping out of school. They can't handle the e-learning. It's not working for them.
Yeah.
Obstacle after obstacle, challenge after challenge. But here's a guy, folks, that has, you know, been helping orphans for a long time in another country, that has certainly had a lot of obstacles. Jeff, what would you tell a parent or students listening today, that, you know, to encourage them?
Well, I guess two things from the parents. I hadn't really thought about this for years since you just mentioned that, but, you know, like I mentioned, we had a very challenged family situation and not much background in education or, really much of anything. But I do remember being very little and my mom telling me, this is the United States. You can be anything you want to be. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know any better. I believed her. And so
yeah.
I thought you can do whatever it is you set your mind to. And I still think that's true. I'm not sure how many people believe that anymore, but I think it's true. If you really put your mind to it. Now, obviously the terrible things can happen to people and beyond their control. But in general, I think that's still true. But then on the other side of it, I think it's about patience, because the more you can learn and the more varied things you can learn, you probably don't know how that's going to help you in the future. Or you may have a goal in mind, and it may not be very likely that you reach that particular goal, but it sort of comes in handy for something else you weren't even expecting. And I've found that being involved sort of at the local level in different entities, the state level, or in these private nonprofit things, that it just, you start to see all these connections and people that can help other people and ideas that you can transfer from one to the other. And, you know, you can connect a lot of dots and you end up with a lot of information that can be helpful in different circumstances that you wouldn't otherwise have.
Absolutely. Well, and you mentioned, you know, going across the board from government to private enterprise to education. Give me two or three of the most challenging issues you think that we're facing today in this culture.
Well, I think the most immediate one is the one you mentioned right there. A lot of kids, I think, are struggling with the remote learning or even how the in-person is working because of all the changes necessary. So and it's different because we've had the advantage of Zoom this time. But if you look at some of those studies that were done in the Spanish flu pandemic, they said that year of class those kids lost cost them actually 3 years of education. Because of the, now it's different because those kids were just at home without really any way to
learn.
But that one year off really set them back about 3 years. So I'm sure you're going to see some effects like that. And, you know, obviously we've got to learn how to get all along with each other. I know we've been through lots of cycles in our history, but
yeah,
always seems like you're going through the worst time when you're going through it.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It's certainly a challenge on a national level. But you know, I grew up in.
I will say that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
I will say, on the state level, I think in Indiana anyway, that's different, and it's always been different. The parties here in the state house and the individuals have always treated it almost to a person as a professional thing, and boy, they can sure argue and get mad at each other on the floor or in committee, and then go out to dinner and be best friends that night because it's.
Well, isn't that the way it's supposed to be?
It's like the old Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
Yeah.
They're talking about their families, and then they clock in and chase each other for 8 hours.
Yeah.
And clock out and go to dinner. It's always been like that here, that things get done. And I think people are sometimes amazed if you look at what percentage of bills that pass either unanimously with Republicans and Democrats, or at least bipartisan support, is something like 60% are unanimous.
Yeah.
Final passage.
Why do you think that is in Indiana?
I just because it's always been collegial like that, and I think that, you know, now people get mad in the moment, and probably a lot of people disagree, but I think everyone's voice is heard. Yeah. They may be unhappy with the final product, but I think there are adjustments made, and it's just people are treated as people, not demeaned, and at least so far.
Yeah, and I would wholeheartedly agree with you. I grew up all over. My dad was a pipe fitter welder. We traveled all over the country. I was a construction. We were called white trash, trailer trash, and everything else because we grew up in some pretty tough situations as well. Went to 11 different schools, but ended up in Indiana about 38 years ago. And I married a Hoosier, and I raised a family here, and I think we got the greatest state in the nation. There's no other state, and I've lived in a lot of them, and there's no greater state than the state of Indiana. And I totally agree with you on your assessment there of being congenial and being willing to, even though we have disagreements, we can disagree and still have discussion about it and dialogue, which I think that's what's missing today across the board in many, many parts of our country and the culture of our country. And I think you represent that today in sharing that. Jeff, how can people get a hold of you? I mean, do you have a Twitter handle or anything like that? Do you have,
My personal Facebook is just Jeff Papa, PAPA. Twitter, I think, is Jeff Papa 13.
Okay. Well, I think this has been great. I appreciate your time today. We're looking forward to working with you on some other opportunities down the road. Frankfort is one of those. I keep telling people that Frankfort is Noblesville 20 years ago and maybe even getting about 10 years because now we're growing even quicker than I think that some people think we are. But I think we are growing. And so I'm excited about what is happening on the north side of Indianapolis, and we're a part of that. So. And we're connected with Zionsville, so we're just right down the road. We come down to Rose's Cafe and all that good stuff. So Rosie's is a pretty good place. Yeah, pretty good stuff. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today, and I appreciate your time, and we appreciate your service to our state. Thank you very much.
Yeah, anytime. Nice talking to you.